Well, I'd like to thank the organisers for allowing me to talk to you today about a new population of BE stars discovered in the Large Magellanic Cloud. And I had a lot of slides to talk about disk formation mechanisms and different theories, and I'll just get rid of that now because we've covered that extremely well. So I'll just talk about the things that are peculiar to this survey. And the survey was conducted on the UK Schmidt Telescope, where we observed in H-alpha and in short red over a three-year period. And the best 12 H-alpha and the best 6 short red images were scanned and combined using Supercosmos plate measuring machine in Edinburgh. And it ended up with data that goes 1 and 1.2 magnitudes deeper than a single exposure. What I did then was to combine the images, merge them, and assign a colour to each of those images, and then equalise the colours on non-emission stars, and that then all the beautiful emission stars just pop through like Christmas trees. They're easy to see. But along with the BE stars, we also get WR stars, we get planetary nebula, we get Myras, we get even small supernova remnants, we get a whole host of objects coming through. So what we have to do then is take all these objects. By then I had 4,000 objects to look at, and go to a MOS instrument like 2DF and AOMEGA on the AAT, or Flames on the VLT, where we can just look at 400 objects all together at the same time with multi-object fiber spectroscopy. And this is a result from 2DF for these objects. I've already published about 550 new BE stars in 2012, but the number is currently up to about 800 or so BE stars. So slowly moving out from that original central 25 square degree area to include areas of the stream and the bridge. And then the spectral classification of so many objects can be problematic. So the best way to start is to do cross-correlation, and that means only using the blue end we've got more absorption information, and using templates, in this case about 154 different templates, well-known templates. And then with both of them we need to and use the blue end, and then remove all the emission lines, and then continuum needs to be removed. And then apodization should be done, so that just attenuates a Cosine Bell to reduce the high wavelength Fourier components that can disturb the edges of the spectrum. And then we can do the cross correlation, and that gives us the best fitting template. The Gaussian there just shows us the percentage of the strength of the best template and the best template that was found in each case. And then we can also check them out. We can use different line ratios to make sure that what the program's automatically doing is actually what we need to be seeing. A question you often get, of course, in the Magellanic Clouds, and it's already come up today, is how many BE to normal B stars you get. And the surveys are very scant, and this is one done by Eva Grebel, which is just, in this case, these are just photometric conclusions. So she's only looking at the luminosity of each of these and coming up with the numbers. Very difficult to precisely say anything about it. But these were done spectroscopically, and once you do that, of course, the far fewer number of objects that you can use. This is the only one in the clouds. This is in the SMC, this particular one. But what you get from this is about a 30% ratio. Well, this will improve over the years as we get more objects and we can get more. From the original survey, this is what I've come up with right across the LMC for this particular type of objects, or the particular luminosity, I should say, that I was looking for. And quite a few of these supergiants, which of course we don't count as BE stars or classical BE stars. And then we have about 107 or 20% that are B bracket E stars, so they've got their forbidden line emission there. And of course the wind compression model, tells us that the terminal velocity wind as a proportion of the escape velocity gives us an idea of how many BE stars we should be finding. And for example, an O6 star would have to rotate about 48% of its critical velocity, while a B2 star only needs to rotate quite a low 48% of its critical velocity to form a disk. Now that translates to about, I think it's a bit less than 180 kilometers a second, so it's actually pretty low. And then we've all seen these diagrams from Struve, and then we're looking for these in the Large Magellanic Cloud as well. We see all these different profiles, and they include, of course, kinematic and non-kinematic effects and instrumental effects that we try to accommodate. The different types of line profiles, well, we see these three or four different peaks, and we see all these small peaks that can change on a matter of days or weeks, all the way down to the continuum. We see more of the features in H beta because it's, of course, three times as weak as H alpha. Well, it's mechanically fixed, so it's 2.86 times weaker. So if you're going to see the Stark effect, or you're going to see high gravity or high electron pressures, you'll see it in these absorption features, H beta much more than H alpha. And then you get the shell effect where the star's going through a shell phase. And then, of course, that affects the H beta line a lot more than the H alpha line. And sometimes you see these narrow profiles, sometimes the absorption feature is quite narrow. So that's just an indication that the density of the gas going around is quite thick. It's quite a hot star as well, most likely. So you're reading the H alpha then more in the upper layers of the disk, and also you get the R to V and the V to R changing. You see all these features in all of these objects. What you do see much more in the LMC is this wine bottle shape. So that means you're looking at the star almost directly down the pole. And we see about 10% of the single peak profiles, so this wine bottle shape. And there's probably a very good reason for that, because the LMC is tilted at 20 to 30 degrees to our line of sight. So you're much more likely to see the stars pole on in the LMC than you are in the galaxy. And then this is just a quick comparison of VLT, how the resolution that you've got changes what you're actually seeing. These were only taken about a month apart on VLT and then AAT. And then there's a little comparison there of how many we find single peak against double peak or shell at any particular time. And as you notice, all the wine bottle shapes are single peak profiles. Radial velocities, I mean, you can get the radial velocities from the helium absorption lines. You can also use Hanchek's equation. You can use H alpha to work out your radial velocities. Rotational velocities, of course. And then there is a slight correlation between the full width half maximum and the V sin I. It's not exactly a one-to-one, and there's quite a bit of scatter, which is mostly due to the equivalent width, changes with the equivalent width. If we look at the rotational velocities now, and this is a comparison of BO all the way to F8, whereas this one's just sticking to the BE stars, we can see a larger number down here. And that, is just evidence that we're looking at a lot more objects pole on than we do in the galaxy, where we're rotating and looking along the disk of the galaxy. Most of the stars will be rotating around the same way we are. Okay. And then I just wanted to also bring to your attention nebula contamination, because we do see a lot of B bracket E stars, and if we look closely, if we look at the images, we see there's a lot of contamination around there. We should get a spectrum of the area of the emission of the H alpha or whatever's around, and if we can subtract, okay, that well and good. Otherwise, be very careful if you're stating that this emission, this forbidden emission, is rising from the star. In this case, we can confidently say it is arising from the star. And in this case, we have to be extremely careful. And we can also use the profiles, of course. If the profile's very straight, then it's above the star. It's not necessarily associated with the star. And here we have an example of a very clean BE star. The radial velocities looking toward the LMC compared with the older population, PNE, and the gas disk of the LMC. These will include a percentage of true velocities and stellar effects, atmospheric effects as well. I just wanted to point out there's a little deficit in the number of velocities just in this area, which can be explained once I put them, gave them all a mark according to their size. There's a little deficit of objects along here, and the line of nodes for the LMC is warped along here, and it goes upwards this way. And there's a little warping of the disk itself just along this way, and there's also warping at both sides. But there's a deficit of objects in this area, and that's what we're seeing just here. It affects planetary nebula as well, and it affects the H1 disk. But what we also see from this, from the velocities themselves, is that the LMC is turning, but at the same time it's twisting at the sides, and it's also moving back away from us. So this side's moving away much faster than this side, which is practically coming towards us. The centre of rotation is about this 270 kilometres a second, and it's somewhere around here. And again, most of the BE stars stick to star-forming region, so you've got a very massive star-forming region going down here toward the stream. So, and H-alpha flux. This is an apparent magnitude luminosity function for the H-alpha emission in BE stars, and it covers massive 9 magnitudes. It's a huge magnitude range. And I've sorted it according to spectral types. And as you can see, a lot of bright stars up this end, a lot of the fainter stars down that end, but there's a real mixture all the way through, so it doesn't necessarily equate to what we're seeing in H-alpha. If we compare the H-alpha magnitude to the V magnitude, we get a little more of a correlation happening, and the main sequence stars tend to be the fainter area of both, and the giant stars up this end, but there's also about a third of them that are mixing in the middle. We get more of a correlation, starts to look a little more like an HR diagram when we compare V magnitude to the EB minus V colours. But after someone was talking yesterday about the correlation between H-alpha and what we see in the infrared, the mid-infrared and far infrared, look at those plots again, because I had plotted them before and I really couldn't see any correlation at all. So I tried it again yesterday, and I sort of got an extended beehive if you go W1 to of Y is W1 to W4. So it's about 3.6 microns to 24 microns. But there's really not much to say about correlating H-alpha with your IR emission. And then you have equivalent width to the E B minus V colour, because there's thought to be a correlation here as well, which you can see, but there's an increased scatter, which is mostly due to the interstellar dust reddening and other effects within the envelope that change the equivalent width quite a bit. Variability, we see it's constant variability. I've put the variability of these stars into 4 main brackets in the LMC. The constant smaller variety, the crazy sort of all over the place variety that's very hard to explain. The long period variables, where you have sudden drops and then slow rises over time, or very very slow rise and then it just stays there with little features on the way. and these sort of features where you get a sudden rise and slow drop, sudden rise, slow drop. And maybe this is a subcategory of this, where you get this sort of feature but with a constant slope. So the large magnitude variability is mainly confined to early spectral types brighter than B4. And long-term variability in years can be accompanied by amplitudes up to 0.8 magnitude, which is pretty enormous. Now, just quickly at the end, I just want to mention some work that's just been submitted with some colleagues in India and in Chile, and which is looking at the infrared. Okay. Looking at the infrared emission, comparing the galaxy with normal B stars in green, with the galactic fields B stars, with red circles represent the cluster B stars, and the black circles are the LMC B stars. And you can see the huge excess that you get in the LMC that needs to be explained. The dotted lines here in this plot represent the free and free bound emission as well, actually, of electron flux. And the solid lines are the stellar black body curve. So the resulting dashed line should account for the expected infrared excess. But what we see, this is an object in the galaxy which follows the curve. This one's a little bit beyond. This is a little higher than expected. But wow, look at what we see in the LMC. Huge, huge difference. There's something major going on here. So, you know, it just confirms what we're seeing at this end. And the best way to explain it is warm dust. So there must be features around that 30... there is around that 30 micron region. There's a carbonaceous feature that can actually do this. So what we need to do is to get spectra and actually look at these, what's causing this, what sort of molecules might be there. Also with WISE, it's a good idea to just look at the images themselves, because the way WISE was created, they find objects on 3.6 and then they just translate across and they publish magnitudes right across to W4. Not necessarily looking to see whether an object is there. So it's always a good idea if using WISE just to check that, don't just take the magnitudes, but do check that there's an object actually there. And just put this together again, just W1 to J minus W1. These LMC stars are confirmed with Spitzer, but if I include all the objects with WISE, you get the same sort of, the same effect happening. And then also this way, if we go WISE W2 to W3, and then move to W2 to W4, there's a shift here of about 4 magnitudes. It's pretty huge shift. These stars up here have to be explained. They may be CNO stars or younger variety BE stars. They're certainly not moving as much as the older ones. They probably move about 2 magnitudes at the most, 1 or 2, compared to about 4 for the rest of the population. So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for a very interesting talk, Warren. Hmm. We have time for a few questions.
Yeah, it depends where you're finding your objects, really. I mean, if they're part of, you have to look at your cluster as well, and you have to look at, you know, is your object well separated from other B stars, or you know, or is it part of an area that's been highly warped in the LMC?
Yeah, so, I had that same question, because yeah. It seems like you, that you made a strong correlation between the orientation of the LMC and the orientation that you would expect to see the BE stars. I wasn't aware that those kinds of studies had been well correlated. That's what you were asking, John, right?
Yeah, it hasn't been. I've just come up with it.
Okay.
No, it hasn't been. No, we need other people to work on this as well.
Yeah. Karen?
I'm just curious, when you look at the WISE data and any of the Spitzer data as well, for these stars, how do you account for, or do you account for, the dust and the intervening stuff within the galaxy contributing to some of those excesses? Is that...
Yeah, that's why you really have to look at the images. We don't know yet. The best way is to wait for James Webb or some way we can actually look at what we're look at, get a spectrum and look at confirm what we're seeing.
Yeah. Just a little comment. So when you see a Weinberg profile,
yeah,
like you showed, yeah, it's not necessarily means that the object is uniform. We have gamma casts in our galaxy or by quarii, it showed such profiles. Mm. And the orientation is 45 degrees to the line of sight, or even more, that could be more agile. Yeah.
Are they all single peak, or are they?
It depends on the resolution. So low resolution looks like a single peak, but at high resolution you can see those shoulders and then the central peak.
Yeah.
So it can be any orientation actually, depending on the distribution of gas.
Yeah.
The separation between the peaks depends on the outer edge of the object that gates off of this. If that's far enough away, then the velocity is very small because the temperature of the velocity is very small.
Yep.
You don't have good enough resolution to actually resolve that.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, if there are no more questions, let's thank Warren again.